Today, Labour cross benches stop this lending disaster. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. As I discussed yesterday, the Senate inquiry into the removal of responsible lending protection for consumers has recommended that the government's policy, which tilts the playing field in favour of the banks against consumers, be passed. The title of the bill is the National Consumer Credit Protection Amendment Supporting Economic Recovery Bill 2020. That is spin, because we'll vote against it and you vote against economic recovery. But no, you've got to look in detail at the bill, not just the title. There will be a Senate vote on the bill on Monday. And in fact, I made a submission to the inquiry, and you can see my recent show where I discussed the issues there. Whilst I agree the extension of best interest responsibilities to other credit products and the addition of marginal protections for payday loans and consumer leasing are laudable, the crux of the issue is simply this. The bill would mean it's easier for a bank to lend someone $2 million than it would be to lend someone $2,000. And that is just plain nuts. So first, got to ask the question, on what possible basis could the Parliament even contemplate the removal of critical consumer protections which were endorsed by the Royal Commission into Financial Services, given the horrid and repeated displays of poor lending practice revealed in the inquiry? Commissioner Hayne was crystal clear. He said, "My conclusions about issues relating to the NCCP Act can be summed up as, apply the law as it stands." Indeed, as the dissenting report says, this bill is an insult to the Commission himself, through to the tens of thousands of people whose lives were destroyed by the bank's rapacious behaviour. It's also an insult to everyone who called for, supported and participated in the Royal Commission. Of course, the banks are keen to walk away from responsible lending obligations and data validation of lending applications. It negates potential claims from class actions, which may well have surfaced if responsible lending was retained. They did attest, though, that the rules had not restricted the flow of credit, which is contrary to the claims which were made by the Treasury. The second point is that ASIC was, perhaps alongside the ACCC, the only regulators looking out for consumers. Yet the proposed changes would push responsibility to APRA, which has already declared it's not interested in consumers, only loan portfolios, and that it has a track record, of course, of siding with the banks and focusing on, quote, financial stability, which is a meta concept at a market and institution level, not the individual borrower level. Again, as the dissenting report says, if responsible lending obligations are removed, then ASIC will no longer have a role in consumer lending, and instead APRA, the prudential regulator, will be relied upon to protect consumers. This is a fundamental shift in the framework for regulating consumer loans and is as good as there being no consumer regulation at all. This is evident in APRA's submission to this committee, which explained APRA's mandate is to protect the Australian community by establishing and enforcing prudential standards and practices designed to ensure that under all reasonable circumstances, financial promises made by the institutions and supervisors are met within a stable, effective and competitive financial system. As the prudential regulator of ADIs, APRA seeks to assure depositors that the deposits are safe and the Australian community that the financial system is stable. There's no mention there of individual borrowers whatsoever, because that is not APRA's job. Should the bill come in unchanged, in fact, it means the banks are able to take as accurate information provided by consumers applying for, say, a mortgage without validation. Worse, if they lend and things go wrong and it transpires the information was in some way inaccurate, the lender can sue the applicants. In contrast, today, lenders are required to ensure that the loan is suitable, and that involves a degree of validation and corporate responsibility. What is really going on here is a hollowing out of ASIC and the removal of its powers, and a streamlined system designed to protect the banks, not consumers. Not only will this increase lending momentum and give a further boost to the already high debt levels and home prices, but it will also place consumers in the crosshairs of legal action down the track if a lender can prove subsequently the information was not accurate. It's a bit like the situation in the insurance sector, where you're obligated to declare everything material which might impact your insurance policy, and we know how often they wriggle away in the small print. And it's also worth noting that the external dispute resolution powers via AFCA, which the Treasury claim would be sufficient to protect consumers, are only accessible once something has gone wrong, and it does nothing to protect consumers on the way in. This is a red herring rolled out by those trying to hide the truth. So from here on in, you will be on your own. If you want a loan and you feel you can afford it, help yourself. So this is my plea to Labour and the crossbenches to reject the bank's support bill and retain responsible lending provisions. In fact, the better path would be to clarify them as needed. The Westpac case left things hanging due to ASIC's poor management of the issue. But taking these essential consumer protections away is not the right solution. In fact, the dissenting report from Senator Nick McKim, who's the Australian Green Senator for Tasmania, makes all the right points. What this boils down to is that people will be left to fend for themselves. As is befitting of this government's ideology, this bill will shift the burden of responsibility from the bank to the consumer. The vast majority of borrowers will not be provided with the most basic of consumer protection, which is that the product being sold to them is fit for purpose. This gets to a fundamental question about how markets are regulated and what protections should be provided to consumers. Commissioner Haim explored this issue at length and highlighted it in the second of four key observations that he made about the misconduct that he uncovered in the introduction to his final report. Entities and individuals acted in the ways they did because they could. Entities set the terms on which they would deal. Consumers often had little detailed knowledge or understanding of the transaction, and consumers had next to no power to negotiate the terms. At most, a consumer could choose from an array of products offered by an entity or by that entity and others, and the consumer was often not able to make a well-informed choice between them. There was a marked imbalance of power and knowledge between those providing the product or service and those acquiring it. This is why consumer regulation exists, because the dream of the efficient market hypothesis, where well-informed individuals act rationally, seeking out the best deal for themselves, and in doing so, this bill is designed that the banks get on with writing loans as big as they possibly can, whether it's good for people or not, so that they can pay even bigger bonuses and rack up even bigger profits. In a country that already has one of the highest level of consumer debt per capita in the world, this bill would give the banks a license to entice people into even more debt. Rather than building productive capacity and ensuring individual security, this would further constrain household spending, further constrain innovation, and further lead Australia down the dead-end path that is an economy built on ever-increasing house prices at the expense of just about everything else. Well said, Senator. And here, I want to give a shout-out to the ABC's Nassim Kadeem. She posted an excellent piece on the ABC news site yesterday titled "Fears of a Debt Disaster as Property Market Runs Hot and Changes to Safe Lending Laws Loom." Jacob had big dreams before the global financial crisis. He wanted to develop his then property in the Tweed Valley into a tourist lodge, but in November 2009, he had a serious accident on the farm tractor and could not work. He asked his lender at the time, who he had taken a high-risk, low-doc loan from, to let him defer mortgage repayments until he could resume work. But the lender would not give him leeway and started charging higher interest and default fees. All they said is, when are you going to pay? He was forced to put the property up for sale in 2010, but because of the GFC, potential buyers were also in strife. Jacob couldn't sell in time to keep the bank at bay, and eventually they repossessed his property. We lost all the hard work of 12 years doing up the property into a real magic place. That's what we lost, he says, and we ended up in a caravan. Jacob's story is one that consumer advocates fear could repeat itself. The federal government is looking to wind back lending laws, saying there are other adequate protections for consumers. Reserve Bank Governor Philip Lowe this week said the central bank would be keeping an eye on lending practices by the banks. But Catherine Temple from the Consumer Action Law Centre is part of a coalition of consumer groups that have written to financial regulators, including the Reserve Bank, detailing their strong opposition to the proposed law. Ms. Temple said axing safe lending laws during a pandemic was risky and would fuel an already overheated housing market. She said that more than 33,000 Australians and 125 community groups had signed the open letter against the National Consumer Credit Protection Amendment supporting Economic Recovery Bill 2020. We are very concerned that we are destined to repeat the mistakes that were made in the lead up to the global financial crisis if these changes go ahead, Ms. Temple said. We can see a debt disaster on the horizon for many people who could take out unaffordable loans as a result of these changes. The bill has been scheduled for a parliamentary debate on Monday after a government-led Senate inquiry report on Friday recommended that changes to the law be passed. However, the bill could still be rejected by the Senate crossbench, with both Labour and Green senators that took part in the inquiry expressing their opposition. Labour senators said in the report they were concerned that the passage of this bill would serve to transfer risk from lenders to consumers and give a significant financial benefit to the banking sector. The Greens said the bill was designed to let banks get on with writing loans as big as they possibly can, whether it's good for people or not. In a country that already has one of the highest levels of consumer debt per capita in the world, this bill would give the bank a license to entice people into even more debt, Green Senator Nick McKim said. And Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg had previously argued that responsible lending obligations would still apply to small amount credit contracts, the SACCs, below $2,000 and consumer leases. And he also noted the government had introduced several reforms that had strengthened consumer protection. These, he said, included handing more power to the corporate watchdog ASIC, a best interest duty for mortgage brokers, increased financial sector civil and criminal penalties, enhanced protections for credit card customers, and establishing the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, AFCA. Despite this, Ms. Temple said that under the government's plans, banks and other lenders would not need to do the same degree of verification and checks to make sure that loans were affordable and suitable for people. We're hoping that the crossbench will vote against this legislation because of the immense risk that it poses not only to individual borrowers and their families, but to the community and the economy more broadly, she said. We know that 2 in 5 Australians are already struggling to pay their bills during the COVID crisis. We don't want to see easy credit tide people over into a way that's just going to lead them further and further into financial hardship. Financial Rights Legal Centre Chief Executive Karen Cox said the Banking Royal Commission reinforced the need for safe lending laws only 2 years ago. This bill will take consumer protection backwards by a decade, let the banks off the hook again, and expose ordinary Australians to more crippling debt, she said. The laws are being wound back at a time when Australia's housing property market is in fact running hot. Property analyst CoreLogic says the market is in one of its strongest growth phases on record. Capital City home prices rose 2% in February, and since October last year, Sydney home values have risen 5.7% to reach a new record high, surpassing their previous peak in 2017. The recovery trend in Sydney followed a 15.3% decline from July 2017 to May 2019, was interrupted by COVID-19, with housing values falling by 3% through the worst of the pandemic. According to CoreLogic's Daily Hedonic Home Value Index, Melbourne dwelling values remain 1.3% lower than their pre-COVID high. Perth values are still 16.9% lower, relative to their 2014 peak. For mortgage brokers, that has meant a boon in business. General inquiries in the last 6 months have been busier than I've had in the past 16 years of being a mortgage broker, Sydney-based mortgage broker Kerry Unwin said. She said low rates allowed people to borrow big, but banks were still verifying people can afford to repay. The banks have reduced what they were assessing loans at in 2018. It was closer to 8%, but now it's closer to 5%, she said. Brokers say the maximum amount people can borrow has increased due to the low interest rates used to assess loans and to take home income boosts from recent tax cuts. But the increase has been limited by a rise in the living expenses benchmark most banks use to assess loan applications. Overall borrowing capacity has remained pretty level because of the increases in living expenses that the banks were benchmarking, someone said. Other sources within the broker sector report borrowing capacity has increased by around 7.5% since July 2019 for a typical family on $150,000 income with two kids. The amount people can borrow has increased even more than that since the peak of lending restrictions and the bank's regulator's 7% interest rate floor on testing customers' ability to service a loan, which was in place during 2018. But Unwin said, so far, access to funding has not been made easier, but there was less paperwork being required when the banks sign up customers. Previously, we would have to provide 3 months bank statements, 3 months credit card statements, and details of liabilities. Perth-based mortgage broker Helia Singh said her customers were trying to push her to get bigger loans from the bank so they could afford more expensive housing. In cities such as Melbourne and Sydney, the prices have gone up so much, she said. There are people who say, I can't afford it. I know I can do it. So how am I going to get my hands on more money? She said lending criteria have not changed much, but warned her customers not to get in over their heads, especially now that responsible lending is ending. People need to be aware of responsible borrowing, she said. If the banks are going to give them money because of the borrowing capacity, that doesn't mean that they should go and get that money. And AMP Capital's chief economist Shane Oliver worries that at some point down the track, interest rates will rise and people will be unable to pay their mortgages. With the removal of responsible lending obligations and the property boom underway, the risk is that those lending standards will be eased and people who maybe shouldn't get a loan will end up getting one, Dr. Oliver said. But he said higher rates would not be on the cards for another few years. The greater likelihood is the Reserve Bank will, with other bank regulators, particularly APRA, put pressure on the banks to slow down the pace of lending and tighten up the lending standards, Dr. Oliver said. Property analyst Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics said if the federal government changes are passed as suggested, it would place most obligations on borrowers. It tilts the playing field in favour of the banks, especially now with the prospect of rates rising and higher unemployment ahead, he said. The borrowers can say whatever they like about their finances, the banks don't have to validate it, but it also means banks can then sue borrowers if later it transpires their information was not correct. The federal government argues that the wind back is to ensure easy credit supply, but Mr. North said that was not an issue in Australia. Indeed, recent RBA data reveals strong lending for housing, even now with the current responsible lending mechanisms in place, he said. Housing credit is rising at an annualised rate of 3.54%, with owner-occupied loans of 5.58% and rising. And Mr. North said too much of the Australian economy was leveraged to housing loans, which has led to home prices rising to unacceptably high levels. The lack of consumer protection, which would result from the removal of responsible lending, is likely to lead to larger loans, quicker loans, and consequently more households getting into financial difficulty, he said. And so there you have it in a nutshell. It's all down now to whether the Labour and crossbenches will do the right thing in the Senate, or whether they will bow to pressure from the banks and, of course, from the government and pass this legislation. Frankly, all bets are off at the moment, but I hope common sense and a broader view of the need to get the economy on a more even keel will actually steer them in the right direction and keep the responsible lending rules in place, even if, as I said earlier, there is a need for some amendments to them. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.